This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Eita, welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrix. My name is Fresh. My partner in crime, Botsang Modimo Amemuilwa, is also in the building.
Good morning, DJ Fresh. Good morning to the viewers, followers, subscribers, lovers. Haters,
friends, yeah, haters, spooks,
yeah, and spooks. There's a lot of spooks on this channel.
I know. I had a conversation with one the other day.
They do come out, and also due to my case,
yeah.
And so one of them was telling me that, hey, we're even discussing what you said about the laws in the country and your case. I'm like, oh, okay, so you are following me. It's okay as long as you are watching.
Exactly.
You know, I have this thing Fresh of saying, anybody who says things about me or even about the things I do at the show behind my back,
sure,
I'm not going to worry about that.
Exactly.
And either they're scared of me or they respect me.
Sure.
So I don't have to worry about them.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I've noticed, you know, I go through the text of this show, you know,
yeah,
and I watch almost every episode,
sure,
to improve, to learn. Very seldomly we have offended people,
yeah,
or people come attacking us. Very seldom. People differ with us,
sure,
here and there, but very seldomly that we have offended. And you know, thumbs up to
us. Is that a good or a bad thing, though?
It's, look, when people differ with you, it's, yeah, okay, it's good, because
and it must happen respectfully.
Platform. Yes, they do it respectfully. But once I've seen other, you know, social media platforms or podcasts where people or hosts or whatever, they get...
It gets dirty.
It gets dirty.
Mm. I think generally, because of the caliber of person, I suppose, that would tune in, they understand that, one, life by its very nature is very political.
Yes.
And politics is a contestation of ideas.
Of ideas, yeah.
And I don't have to hate you to disagree with you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like when we spoke about the white genocide situation.
Yes.
Remember I did a clip about that we have a crime problem.
Yeah.
And there's an Afrikaans guy who commented about the levels of crime. And I told him, you know, me and you agree with each other that we have a crime problem.
Yeah.
But you're never going to convince me of a white genocide.
Nah, that's,
you can come to me with a research paper. You will never convince me of a white genocide because the numbers do not lie.
Do not lie, yes.
And incidentally, after that episode, the new crime stats came out. And of all the farm killings, there were more black people in the farm killings than white people.
Farm workers.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you can never convince me of a white genocide. But anyway, maybe you can convince me that we have a water crisis. Earlier in the week, the EFF marched on Johannesburg Water to demand action to resolve the water crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And the EFF stated that the water crisis began in 2022 when reservoir levels in the western areas dropped dangerously low, yet the municipality failed to take action. By 2023, outages had worsened across the northern and western regions, leaving some communities without water for an entire month. You are in Centurion. You haven't had water in how long now?
For a week. And you know, first of all, I'm glad the EFF issued that speech, and I'll remind that statement, and
yes,
I'll remind the followers what I said, and EFF dates back to 2022, you know,
yes,
they are quoting. You remember what I said in March last year, that come October 2024,
yeah,
we'll have water crisis. Mm. Now there'll be mushroom, and it's happening everywhere. It's not only in Johannesburg. And look, I live in St. John, in the area, and even the prime area, the Gulf Estate, the South Downs area towards Irene.
Yeah.
There has not been water since last week. We woke up last week Thursday without water.
Mm.
And it was not until Sunday. Now that was not planned for. And I did not know. I want to talk to my friends who are engineers to tell, because they said the pipe is a 450 millimeter pipe. Because at least we get updates,
sure,
from the councillors. It's going underneath the Hennops River. And now it's corroded. It's damaged for over the years, and wear and tear and lack of maintenance. Why did it go underneath a river? It's a story for another day. And it's so damaged that they closed on Sunday. Water came out for 2 hours.
Mm.
Then it was gone. We woke up, I took a shower, Monday we woke up, there's no water. And actually, smart people would say once the water was back because of the water crisis, you must start filling the buckets and the bathtubs in order to then have reserves. But then you look at what is happening, not only in Johannesburg, the story of Hammanskraal, where even people died of contaminated water. You look at the story in Lihurutz, in Zirast, in the northwest.
Sure.
The economy was brought to standstill yesterday. And this, I wrote in some group that this thing of the protest on the N4 in my village, as a matter of fact, in Dinokana, in Lihurutz, and all those areas, it has been years that people have been complaining about water. And old people were sitting at them. You know, I saw in one placard before the police shot at those people, because one of my
I assume it was rubber bullets.
Yes, it was okay. Rubber bullets and tear gas. But those were goggles. Some were choking, couldn't breathe. You know, there's elderly people. People are protesting. Yes, they closed the N4, but that is the nature of the protest. The nature of a protest is to cause a havoc. Yes, this was a serious havoc. I said to somebody yesterday, you know, thinking of my work, every time there are protests within the what you call border towns or border corridors, it affects many other countries and trade. And somebody was saying to me, the police had to remove those people because the queue to the border, which is affecting, you know, Namibia, Botswana, DRC to some extent, Zambia, and all those other countries, because there's the alternative path. That and Khobla's Bridge, it is the alternative roads for the Trans-Kalahari Corridor as well as going to Africa.
But I think Khobla's Yona is more for to go to Zim and Malawi.
Yeah.
You can't go to Namibia via Khobla's because you're adding another 300 Ks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, look at the irony of the whole thing. Two of the border posts going into Botswana, one going from Limpopo into Zimbabwe because we've got a small border there, and one in the KZN, they were flooded. Look at the irony of the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, places are lack of water, then there's too much rainfall, and they are flooded. And I'm sitting, I'm like, where are the engineers? KZN every year, without failure, no matter the volume of rainfall, there are deaths in KZN. There's destruction of houses. The government has come to explain that people built in wetlands, in wrong areas. And so why do you allow them? Why do you allow them to extend that people end up living there? People are desperate for land. It goes back to the question of the land.
Yeah, but what does the law say about relocating people?
Yeah, you can't relocate them until you find them in suitable accommodation.
Exactly.
But why wait for them to be in unsuitable accommodation? If the government was doing its job proper, the housing allocation, residential housing allocation, the backlog that we have.
But do we even have capacity to monitor the mushrooming of informal settlements?
We don't. Sadly, the government does not, and we cannot blame the government for that. But, you know, when I started working for government, we're still in the new South Africa. Proper planning, Tato, helps to avoid crisis. If the government had put an effort in urbanizing or developing the rural areas, we would not be sitting with Joburg being unable to provide water. In a city of Joburg or Johannesburg is unable to provide water because of the number of people. One of the reasons is the number of people. If you have planned that 5 million people will live in Joburg, you have created infrastructure for 5 million people. Then suddenly you've got 8 million people. That's one of the problems because people are flocking into Gauteng or into Joburg, you know, to look for opportunities, any other form of opportunity.
Can we blame the influx of people, or can we look at the fact that generally there's been slacking when it comes to infrastructure, either upgrading or just general maintenance?
Maintenance, yes. Look, and upgrading, maintenance, we cannot blame people for looking for opportunities.
Or sometimes the reprioritization of money. So we only have X amount as whatever municipality.
Exactly.
Do we fix infrastructure? Do we bolster our clinics? And it doesn't help that you also have a populace that has a lot of people that are not willing to pay for services. They will strike for water, but they'll not allow you to meter the water so you can pay for the water. So we're dealing with, like, I don't want to be in any municipality.
It's a culture that we have adopted. Remember what was one of our weapons to fight the apartheid regime?
Mm.
And when people think government, they think it's something that is imposing things on them. Generally, sure. People think that. One of the strategies, it was consumer boycott, boycott paying services.
Mm.
I can tell you, I didn't have a house when that happened. I was living with my parents. Mm. But that has filtered into me to some extent to say, when I'm unhappy with the municipality about something, I shall not pay. You understand? It's reality.
In fact, you haven't had access to electricity for how long?
It's over a year now. And it's because I was not paying. And the fans, and the council didn't play with me. They came, cut this.
Sure.
But it's that thing of, I'm not happy about something.
But you have therefore, a dispute. You have a dispute.
I have a dispute.
Yes, yes.
I have a serious dispute which is receiving attention.
Sure.
And thanks to the new administration of Tshwane, there is a dispute because look at the maintenance. When a municipality say they can't maintain, but the number of houses, the number of people who are paying rates and taxes, understand, increases.
Sure.
What are they doing with the rates and taxes?
Mm.
Understand what service? For example, there's this argument that actually crossed my mind when we spoke of what, that they are now going to charge people or even jail them and prosecute them if you've got solar. Like, I'm off the grid, I'm dependent.
Mm. Mm.
If you've got, they want us to pay some taxes, some rates or taxes towards the infrastructure they've bought outside your house, using it.
In fact, the argument that they made was this,
mm-hmm.
that majority of people that are using solar
yes.
are not fully off the grid.
Yes.
They are still plugged into the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And normally what happens is once the sun has stopped providing you power for your batteries, if you're using batteries,
yes.
You can set your
inverter yes.
to bring Eskom in as and when the batteries need to be topped,
to
up.
Be topped up.
So what they're saying is, as long as you are plugged into our infrastructure,
yes.
you must pay something for that.
That's fair. Yeah. And I agree with that. That's fair because you are still using the infrastructure.
But if you're fully off the grid.
If you are fully off the grid, there's a case now in court.
Yeah.
The municipalities with Salga, they have approached the court
yeah.
to say, even if you are fully off the grid, the municipality in its planning, they have brought electricity to your doorstep or your sure. yard, and that infrastructure is there whether you are using it or not. It's there. It has to be maintained, because if you look at the meter box outside
yeah.
you'll find that you can plug 6 or 8 houses
sure.
in one box, and the municipality says we are maintaining that, we brought it there. You understand? But I've got an argument. Let them maintain that with the rates and taxes I'm paying to the municipality.
Because I'm paying them anyway.
I'm paying the rates and taxes.
Yeah.
They cannot face to come with some special taxation of electricity that I am not using. Or they failed to maintain and to upkeep. People are crying about water and electricity.
Sure.
And that's fairness. I mean, in my area, it's a rusted pipe. Guess why it took so long? And we don't know. There's no indication when will we get water. Because the clamps that are going to temporarily clamp that pipe to can seal it. That is the way they used. Some were not available in the market. I don't know where they had to get after 2 days. And it's a temporary. After they seal or clamp it, we may have water for a few hours. Then water is gone again. You know, I'm imagining families where there's kids and there's more than 5 people in the house and all that. Although they've provided alternative, like trucks are coming with buckets. We are picking up water with buckets. And, you know, I must look for a small house. Well, it can't be in Joburg, because Joburg is the same as well. Maybe I should try Ekurhuleni. I haven't heard about the crisis there. But this is lack of planning. This is lack of, you know, political office bearers or decision makers. You sit there, you are watching how this city is growing and developing. You must maintain infrastructure. You must upgrade your infrastructure as well.
Sure.
I mean, if you look at Deep Sloot, I always use Deep Sloot as an example, or Olive and Houtbush in Tshwane. That they started as a squatter camp. Then the government started bringing water with tankers. Then they started bringing electricity. Then they developed it with the low-cost housing and free housing. When they were doing that, did they upgrade the reservoirs? Now the people of Tshwane South or of Joburg North are sharing the water with increased capacity.
Sure.
And you cannot fail to plan for that over years. That's why long-term planning is important. You understand? But again, it's all about infrastructure maintenance.
And so even something as basic as sewage. I mean, how often are is the sewage piping upgraded according to how many more people are living in an area?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. There is a retirement development near Northgate.
Okay.
I think it's called Celebration.
Okay.
And they started building Celebration about, it was in plans already about 15 years ago. And already, because they had to upgrade, before they were allowed to do the redevelopment, they had to upgrade the sewage system so that you have bigger pipes.
Pipes, yeah. That can take more capacity.
More capacity. Also, give time in village. I'm sure Prun Jusi are Chada. So those pipes need to be able to flow.
Those people are home most of the time, unlike us who go to work.
And one of the pipes had to go through my property. So we had to literally, kind of what is it called? So part of my property is actually servitude.
It's servitude, yeah.
So part of my property belongs to the municipality, yes, because the pipe runs through.
And they can come and take it. This is where expropriation works. You must actually go and tell AfriForum that was expropriation for the best interest of the public.
So as much as it was an inconvenience for the four or five properties that had to bear the brunt of this upgrade of the sewage system, it was great to see it happen. Because in a lot of areas where you're seeing massive developments, you never see sewage upgraded.
Yeah. And that's the challenge. But with the, you know, the problem also with the water crisis, you must remember that water in South Africa, it's enshrined in the constitution. It's a constitutional right, just like education and basic health. Now, if we can't, and I don't see the Helen Suzman Foundation, the Thabo Mbeki Foundation, where are all these foundations that rise when there's illegal immigrants or Pakistan is somewhere at the border, and when there's issues they run to court? Where are they now to go and rise and run and defend and take the government to court to say the government is failing to give people basic water for whatever reason.
Or failing with but a regular still water until
whatever
we have water
reason. You know, yesterday I had to wake up and go to the filling station because I don't trust the water that we get from tankers.
Sure.
I've heard stories about that. Mm. So I had to go and buy bottled water. Mm. One will say they've boiled that water and put a drop of, a Jik or bleach. But I had to, and I paid like 27 rand for 1.5 liter of water, and there were few bottles left.
Mm.
But imagine a person who has to choose between bread for the kids to eat and buying a bottle of water.
Mm.
And this is a constitutional issue. This is a very serious political issue that the government of the day cannot provide people with water.
Mm.
And for me, it's an indictment actually to the public service that we are failing our own people. But you know how somebody said I'm rude when I said I'm glad I'm living in a white dominated suburb and it's happening there.
Mm.
So it's hitting everybody equally now. Yeah, you must see the WhatsApp group there. I love the whole day. Hey, they talk things there. Yeah. I see that I love the whole day. Mm. I'm like, well, some people are used to this.
Yeah.
Some people live like this.
Some people have lived like this. That's all they know,
in fact. All they know.
Yeah.
You understand? But
not to justify it.
No, it's not justified.
But sometimes we must all be humbled.
Yeah. And it's humbling that I have to take Vascom. But anyway, I've not used a shower because the water is cold and my water pressure has been reduced.
Sure.
So I'm technically also used to having less pressured water. It's survival, bro.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the case of pediatrician surgeon Peter Beale.
Yes.
The good doctor has been acquitted of all charges. He was arrested in 2019 mm-hmm. on a culpable homicide charge. Three children that he operated on passed away.
Yes.
And he's been acquitted. And there was a similar case last year this time of a South African pediatric oncologist, Cyril Karabas. He was held in the United Emirates.
Oh, yes, I remember.
For about
a year.
But he was acquitted of manslaughter for that case, being held for a year almost. And he was subsequently informed that the prosecution will appeal that case.
Mm-hmm.
So this creates a situation where now you've got professionals who might feel, if I risk being charged with manslaughter or negligence, even where I wasn't negligent,
mm-mm.
can I really practice? Should I practice?
Yeah.
Because I've got the Hippocratic Oath that compels me to help people.
Yes.
But also, can I say to a family, I can't touch your son because the risk is this high. And if he doesn't make it, I might be liable.
Yeah.
Like, where do I draw the line between my oath end my life.
And despite even the oath, your profession and wanting to help people.
Yes.
You know, when this came, I actually wanted you to talk about it because it baffles me. When I followed the story, I even wrote a message to a friend who's a doctor. And I said to him, what's your view and opinion about this? He didn't answer me. I think he knew I was going to talk about it in the show.
Mm.
Tato, it is the same as, and for me, professionals, you may be a pediatrician, you may be a policeman, you may be, I made an example with a vehicle. When you take your vehicle to whatever the company you use, a brand, and they misdiagnose it, which happens very often,
yes,
despite the technology. Let's say your car blows the engine and what? And you can prove that the error is on them, then they replace or the warranty or your insurance. Most of the time is the insurance. Now somebody says you can't compare vehicles with human beings. These are kids. These are three kids that died in the hands of this gentleman. And he's so old, you know, sadly. But I'm asking myself, if you were intentionally, and it could be proven legally that you were intentionally negligent or you failed to follow some of the prescribed and required steps in conducting a surgery or operating a person, that's a different ball game. But if in this instance there's lives lost, one has to be very sensitive about it. But if the judge says the state failed to prove any form of negligence beyond reasonable doubt on the side of the pediatrician, and unfortunately it was these three kids, it was the same misdiagnosis. Like it's misdiagnosed them, is that intentional? Is that negligent? Was there, because once you do something with a motive, was there a motive behind the whole thing? And that's how courts operate, you know, unfortunately. Was there an intention to mislead, to kill? What was the purpose? What was the motive? What was the benefit for doing that?
Did you force an operation so you can make more money?
Exactly.
For argument's
sake.
Yes. Because I get it, there's also now a concern that nowadays there are so many people electing to do a cesarean, for instance.
Yes.
And is it good that, the prevalence of cesarean sections is here? And, versus 20 years ago,
exactly,
where you pushed until.
Yeah, and that's that kind of a situation. I'm very much interested to hear what SAMA, South African Medical Association, is going to say professionally and about this incident. And one will have to go and read the court papers. What were they? Because there's charges there of fraud as well. I don't know where does fraud coming into this, but I was focusing on the negligent part of it. Was he negligent? And look, may the souls of those young, kids rest in peace and all that. However, we should not try and use courts or law as enforcement in order to scare professionals from doing their job. And that's why we are sitting with a situation in South Africa where policemen get slapped and beaten up and disarmed by civilians because they are afraid to use their firearms unless your life is endangered. And it's not only policemen, even any civilian firearm owner. When you look at the amended firearm act, it actually says you can't shoot. Basically, most of the things they said is that you can't kill a person with your firearm, even if it's a licensed firearm.
Actually, the other day I had Sydney Matlaku on that very chair you're sitting on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a firearm instructor.
Okay.
And we spoke about the fact that owning a firearm is almost a burden.
Yes.
Because as much as you're thinking self-defense, you also need to understand the repercussions of pulling that thing out, just pulling it out. Already, the law starts ticking.
Yes. It's a burden to own a firearm. It's also a risk.
Now imagine I'm a police officer. I'm in a shootout. I still have a responsibility to make sure that where I'm shooting, if I'm shooting at Botsang, there's no one behind Botsang that is also in danger.
Exactly.
Because
or
next to Botsang. So now, when do I discharge of my duties when I also have the law sitting here?
And there's a problem. That's why people think... Commissioner Mukwana's in case at N and his team, they have gone beyond the law.
I think they must defend themselves and they must keep shooting.
You know, like this story,
it's them or me.
It's them, and for me, that's the belief. I've been owning my first firearm since 1995.
Sure.
I've discharged it several times.
Sure.
But every time I think of this whole thing that I may end up in the police cells, which has happened actually twice, that I end up in the police cells because of the firearm.
Mm.
And the one I was acquitted because that's in self-defense.
Mm.
The other time, as you said, pulling it.
Already the law is says,
on you.
Okay, we're watching.
Yeah.
Now.
You haven't shot anybody. You have not pointed.
What's next?
Yeah. So now when doctors, when engineers, you know, it happens that engineers, we had that building. You remember the collapse of the building in, I think it was in Bijo, King Williamstown in the Eastern Cape, that building. Engineers, doctors, policemen, those are all professionals in their field of work. And they are human beings as well.
Mm.
Even judges in court, they're human beings as well.
Mm.
Or soccer referees, they're human beings. It's a professional person. Do we have a room? And I don't want to encourage negligence. Do you have a room to say, this is a human being, nobody is perfect, and it is common in your field of any work that you may do an error of judgment?
Given what science is right now, should we still have room for misdiagnoses?
That's one of the arguments.
So, for instance, a friend of mine lost her mom to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But before they realized she had stage 4 cancer, she was misdiagnosed for the longest time. So by the time we realized that there's a cancer here, it was late. And now the debate with the family was, do we sue or not? Because you've been telling us that our mom is suffering from this, and she's not.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the cancer is busy eating at her.
Tato, you're talking about technology. It's operated by and fed by human beings.
Mm.
There's a phrase that I like, and I've used it in the American concept. When they created computer programs, they also created what do you call this? The antidotes.
Sure.
Understand?
Mm.
It's the same as with medicines.
Mm.
When they created these toxic medicines, they created the probiotics as well.
Mm.
Even if it's a computer, it's still operated by a human being.
Mm.
And when it prints the results or issues them, it's a human being that must interpret them because it's written in codes.
Yes.
It's not what me and you can read.
Mm.
It's written in code. It's still a human being. And I say, we can also look at the history of a person.
Sure.
If this doctor who has been released now and set free, one can look at since he started practicing as a pediatrician, how many people did he operate?
Mm.
And one life is important, I fully agree. But if this person has conducted over 200 surgeries on kids, and 197 are successful.
But I guess success means they didn't die.
Yes.
But how many of those surgeries were appropriate?
Okay, and people are
because,
alive. Yeah.
Because as much as you survived the surgery, did you need it?
Did you need the surgery?
Is that how far we need to go then if we're going to now test whether or not this person is a successful surgeon? So I mean, for instance, there's the case of the three-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Bill is accused of misrepresenting to the child's parents that a biopsy had confirmed he had Hirschsprung's disease and required pull-through surgery. This was when there was, in truth, no confirmation of the diagnosis and the surgery was unnecessary and inappropriate.
Yeah. Look.
And I think that the acquittal is based on inconsistencies because it's three different cases.
Cases, yes.
But if you have tried for the one case where you're saying to Butsang, this is the problem, we need to go in. But there was no need to go in.
To go, yeah.
But now you're dead because we went in. What do we do? Do we try you for negligence?
Again.
Do you do time? Are you asked? Is it a case of you must compensate the family? Or is it happens, we all move on with our lives?
Look, I think once they've gone through it, because the trial was murder, remember? And they will strike you of the role, you know, the medical association role, they'll withdraw your license. You may end up paying the family. It will not return life, but for the suffering and the trauma. And in this instance, actually, the NPA, they wanted to jail him.
Mm.
They actually wanted him to serve time in jail. I think they are going to appeal this matter. But I think what bailed him, again, I always say to people, when you've got a legal matter against a person, don't gang up. Don't bring things together. And as you correctly say, if it was one case, the facts would have been one case. But the judge relies on what is put in front of them. And that's what, you know, with all my legal cases, I never liked judges. But after going through a lot and understanding, the judge can only make a decision based on what is in front of them.
Absolutely.
Not assumptions. What the law has prescribed and what the prosecuting authority or the applicant has put in front of them. And I listened to that judgment very well. And when he said, the state hasn't proved beyond reasonable doubt.
Sure.
They haven't provided sufficient information that demonstrate that on those three, you know, occasions, he was negligent, there was malice intentions and things like that. So that is the challenge, to be able to can prove such things in this situation.
We have people walking down here on their phones like they're in their mother's houses. But anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, so it's a wait and see, but I think the NPA and some are going to appeal this matter.
In fact, during closing arguments, apparently the state conceded that Dr. Beale could not be convicted of murder over the 21-year-old's death, and at least requested the court to find him guilty of culpable homicide, at the very least.
Yeah. You concede and you are becoming inconsistent. You move away from what you initially brought in front of the court. So it's a challenge.
What's interesting is that one of the families are appealing.
Did they already announce?
Yes. Okay, so let's see, based on the one case of the family,
what would
how
happen?
Far it will go.
Yeah, I want to see doctors and professionals in the field, not only because of SAMA, but their opinions, especially those at advanced medicinal studies, like surgeons and all that, and working with kids. Kids are very sensitive. They're like elderly people.
Sure.
Kids and the elderly, I think one needs to be, you know, extra care and all those things. But we'll wait and see.
Absolutely. While we're here, let's talk about injustices of the justice system. You know, what are your thoughts and why is your mind here right now?
You know, where do I start? There's been quite a number of people and friends and articles I've come across. Actually, this has made me to even change and influence the title of my ready book that I can't publish because of my case that is, you know, subjudice.
Sure.
And I look at courts, Tato. You know, I used to go and sit when I studied, you know, primarily.
Yeah.
I used to go to courts and listen to cases and you know, to develop my interest in law and all that. And you look, remember, there's the law, there's the judiciary, the judge, and the laws are made in parliament. Now, this is where politics comes in. MPs make the laws, supported by experts and all that. Then there's the judiciary. And I grew up thinking the judiciary, and it was political, because I was influenced by the judges are racist, they hate black people, they want to jail us. And therefore, my attitude towards the judiciary has been very strong. That's why I wanted to study law in order to go and fight the judges. That was the purpose. I was going to be the defense side.
Yes.
Then there's the prosecuting authority, which is an administrative arm of the justice system. These three things, they don't talk together, Tato. And that's why I'm saying the injustice of the justice system. You sit in court. Let me make an example with the divorce one first. You know, where kids are involved and you get divorced. And I've done that several times. You understand?
Oh, you're gonna be a professional divorcee. A career divorcee.
Yeah. And the court will go and primarily, in the old laws, the court will go and primarily focus on the material as well as the offsprings of the marriage.
Yes.
Laws change. They added other things. They started adding the well-being, because people started being mentally unstable. People started committing suicide because of divorce. Sometimes people's social lives will be destroyed, or economic lives, because of the divorce. That's why a lot of people stayed in, what do you call it, unhappy marriages, because they were afraid to lose a certain element of it. That's an injustice. You understand? When you are now forced by the system, because you will lose a certain part of your pension, your material or what. For me, it cannot be justice. It's unjust. People may say, yes, you may have married out of committee of property, or you may have had an ANC and all that. But I know of cases where people even with an antenuptial contract. If you can just come and convince the law that no, even with the ANC contract, I still want to benefit more. And then one of the things I've written a lot about extensively is the customary law. Actually, it's not even customary law, the Recognition of Customary Marriage Act. It's a 1998 act that was specifically designed by who? By white people, white lawmakers. It was 1988. For who? For black people, because people who marry in customary tradition are black people. Now, you find a white old school judge being tipped by some old madala from a village on how customary law works for Botswana or the Ngunis, and they write a law about it and they impose it on us. I'm one of the people who are saying the Customary Marriage Act actually was designed for African people, but it actually disadvantaged African people than anybody else. How does Mr. Jan van Pierrewiet sit in a court of law and want to convince Ntate Sekgwale sitting in a village in Dinokana how customary law worked for that? How did we arrive there? Why do we marry customarily through the custom union that is governed mainly by what you call it, the chiefs and the kings? Kokhotla. But when you divorce, it goes to a normal civil court. And that's where the other disjuncture is, that there's a way that this nation has practiced this custom and this tradition. And they've accepted it and they marry their kids. Now, when it's time to separate, we must go to the civil court, whether that marriage was confirmed in front of the court or not. Let me make an example with my own case. I woke up one day years back and the sheriff walked into my office and this lady said, we are married customarily. When I got the summons, I just wrote to the court and said, nonsense, I'm not married to this person. A friend of mine, may he still rest in peace, you know, Ronald Stigman, said, bro, he was a lawyer. And I said, go to court and address the court.
Sure.
I went and addressed the court. Fresh, I've written a whole book about this. Actually, that one I can publish because I was waiting for the case. It started from 2015. It only ended in 2022.
Wow.
Only. And I was dragging her, actually. I was dragging her. I was doing what politicians do. In court, and this is the bizarre part of the whole thing. In court, this lady asked, because you must know, when did you get married? Who was there? And she said, he was not there. I was not there. I was not at my wedding.
But you're still married.
But I'm married in absentia. That's how I titled the book, The Groom That Never Was There.
Oh, wow.
Understand? And she said, when did Botan leave home? He left, I think, Thursday or Friday. When was the wedding? Saturday. When did he come back? Tuesday. So the marriage went on when the groom was not there. And the court says customary marriage can happen when the groom was not there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You see now, all other marriages, you cannot marry in absentia.
Yes.
And look, what I'm talking about comes from my own experience. And on a lower court, then I appeal on the high court, and that's where it dragged until she's like, you know what, I'll leave this man in peace. And on lower court, at the magistrate court, the magistrate said, yeah, you were not there, but some of your family members were there, so you are married.
So Vele, were they there?
Yes, some were there.
But why were they at a ceremony that you were not at? I'm very confused.
Yeah, that's exactly my argument. Why were they there? No, they said I'd asked them, and then the next thing I withdrew, I said, no, I'm not marrying anymore. So they decided we are continuing. So you are marrying me in absentia, you are marrying me by force.
So your uncles threw you under the bus?
Exactly.
Wow.
But that's the unjust part of the law.
Yes.
Because what I've learned in the requirement of common law practice, there's four requirements of a marriage.
Yes.
One, you must be of age. In other words, 18. You can't marry when you are below 18 in South Africa.
Yes.
You must be. Two, you must consent to that marriage, to that person. I will accept her to marry me. Three, which is new now, they've got this thing of the type of marriage you are marrying to. You understand? Because there's customary marriage, there's what do they call this? Common law marriages, there's religious marriages, and this new one of same-sex marriages. So you must consent to the type of marriage you are marrying at. So when and where did I consent? While the court, you could see these things are just being pushed. But let me tell you, Tato, the delays in the justice system, the people with money, you know, the thing of justice is for those who can afford good lawyers and money. You understand? It has proven. If you look at the cases, why would a case run in court for over 6 years? We have people with cases running over 6 years. We have cases in people running over 5 years. And people who have the money, they can drag this whole thing.
Yes.
Because they can afford, especially government institutions. During the course of this week in parliament, the Economic Freedom Fighters, one of their members, questioned Minister Mamoloko Kubayi on how much money has the Department of Justice spent on legal fees. Shocking results. Guess what, Tato? Mm. And this is what brought this topic as well, or added. The five top law firms of South Africa, they are lily white, purely white.
Mm.
They got 90% of the budget of the state attorneys. 90%, five big law firms in South Africa.
Are they the best counsel that could have done the job?
Look, how do we measure the best? We've got the best counsels. We have the advocate Sikakans, the advocate Dalimpofu, Tembek, and many others that we know they are good, but they are not in those law firms.
Mm.
You understand? They are not in those law firms. Why would the state attorneys go and instruct? Dali loses only when it's political, when he's doing political cases on the side. If anything that Dali does politically, he will lose until administration changes.
And you know, sometimes, of justice. And sometimes I feel like Brad dilutes the case out of principle or out of, I'm going to take it just to be on the right side of history, as it were. But well, I know I'm not going to win here.
The other day he was interviewed and he said some of these cases he's even doing them pro bono, or most of them actually, to help people. You know, I've got my own case, and there were a lot of lawyers who were, and this is the labor matter, who were volunteering to do it. I've been representing myself until 2 weeks ago. And I said, no, because judges and lawyers are human beings.
Yeah.
They get compromised at the end. Every human being has a price tag on their head.
Mm.
And I've seen how when I represent myself in cases, I may be doing, you know, technical glitches here and there, but I tend to do things better than when I've hired somebody.
Ah, yes.
You understand? Mm. I've on one occasion, first time I relied on a lawyer because there was a legal insurance, I end up with a criminal record for something that even other lawyers said you would have been acquitted on this whole thing.
Mm.
And the justice system becomes unjust when those without money, those without resources get delayed.
Mm.
Understand? It's where the problem is.
Surely, as much as there's an allowance for a Stalingrad approach to justice, where because you know the system, you can dig your heels in and drag a case.
Yes,
like
yes.
You did with your ex, where you dragged it until she got frustrated.
Yeah.
But you're going through the same thing with your employer.
Yes.
That they are dragging things along, I guess in the hope that they'll exhaust you legally.
They exhaust you,
Then you will give up.
And you'll give up,
At what stage do we say, surely there must be up to a certain point that you're allowed to drag things out, where it becomes blatant that you are dragging things out?
Look, in my experience,
because it almost becomes a miscarriage of justice, because I don't have the resources to continue to pay and fight, I lose. I didn't actually lose. I'm conceding that but it doesn't mean I got justice, or that from a legal point of view, that they were right.
No, it happens a lot. You know, but one day you must make time and go and sit in, don't go to criminal courts, go and sit in the labor or civil courts and see what happens there. I think there's a gray area. Like I always say, the judges, the jury, they are there to implement the law. They did not write. Some of them may have contributed to it over time.
Sure.
Where there's a gray area in the law, the judge can use common sense easily, because then it will go to the appeals and the review. And our justice system, and my question, I'm not just questioning the law in South Africa, because we've got good laws. I'm questioning the system, you understand? Where you can go to court and a docket is missing, And then the case gets postponed.
Yeah.
But because of the backlog in courts, because of lack of capacity and all those things, then it gets postponed. Another year, you wait. Look at the Senzo Meyiwa case.
Mm.
There were 2 decades at some stage. You understand? You go to the labor court. I think the laws in South Africa did not do enough to can assist the labor court. One, let me tell you, the labor court is the high court, and they are not using electronic systems. The high courts of South Africa, everything must be filed electronically because of avoiding documents missing, yes, files disappearing. Mm. Labor court, which has the biggest backlog, which is supposed to have at least 33 judges, it has three.
And the sad thing about the backlog at the labor court is that there are people sitting at home with no income.
Yes.
And no justice.
And no justice.
But there's a backlog.
There's backlog. Exactly.
That is unjust.
Yeah. I walked into the labor court 2 weeks back. Everything was proper.
Mm.
And I took it upon myself to can motivate to the judge president of the labor court, you know, a year ago, to say, I'm suffering, I'm going through this, I can't move on with my life, I'm motivating, I want my day in court. Mm. You know, I was using Zoom as well. I want my day in court as soon as possible. Expedited date, that's what they call it.
Mm.
The judge president granted it.
Mm.
We went 2 weeks back. Guess what? When we get there, the file is a mess. Documents on the file are still missing. And the judge can't do anything. The judge sits there and said, Mwilwa, I understand your situation, but I could not read this. It's a mess.
But why is he getting the file on the day?
No, it's not. They are getting it, I think, 15 days before.
So 15 days ago, why did he not say, I can't make head or tails of this file?
That I can't question the judge.
But I'm asking that question.
Yeah.
That if he got the file vele 15 days ago,
yes,
why wait until the day of the appearance to say, I can't read this thing?
That was my question.
Because if I can't read it, I send it back.
Send it back.
This case is, I'm deliberating over this thing in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Can we give me a file that is coherent?
Exactly.
And because again, that in itself is a miscarriage of justice.
So
surely.
Exactly. And that's what happens. No. And then you sit there and like,
Ngaluma judge.
Yeah, then Oluma judge will be judge criminal. You don't do that. You see, and I ask myself that question. I actually ask my legal rep and say, what happens? What is a recourse for me? You understand? I'm the one prejudiced. Whose responsibility was it first to make the file? The employer, not me. Remember, they are the applicant.
So I put it to you that maybe they made sure the file made no sense intentionally.
Intentionally.
So that it can be taken back.
Exactly.
Because we know there's a backlog of dates.
Yes.
We know.
Exactly.
So if this thing, the judge says, take this thing, go fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are you'll only get a date next year.
Exactly. But look at the worst part of it. Mm. I ask a question. The justice system, what provision does it make in this instance?
Sure.
Where it is deliberate that somebody
made sure this file was stuffed.
Made sure somebody, and I don't point a finger at anybody.
Yeah.
Man, what happens to the victim in this instance?
Yes.
And you know, a friend who's a lawyer who was there said to me, the same as the rape case or the murder. Mm. The docket disappears.
Mm.
The justice system does not make provision to what happens to the victim at that particular point.
Mm.
It will send things back. Go and create a new file, or go and create a new docket. Go and investigate what happens. Go and investigate what happens.
And in a world of cloud storage, why are things strictly in a file versus every page that goes into a file is scanned and saved on the cloud?
And it's available.
And saved in order.
And it's available. Yes, the order, the pagination and all that.
And it can be just called up by typing Mwilwa versus the state, if that's what it is.
Exactly.
And it appears in order. How are judges still getting a massive file that anyone can shuffle it like a pack of cards?
Now,
because they know it's going to frustrate the judge and he's going to throw it back.
Exactly. You understand? That's why I'm not questioning the judges. I'm questioning the system. Because the system is designed and made in such a way that it actually handcuffs the judges.
I think Judge Ostoutu, because if he got the file 2 weeks ago, he knew 2 weeks ago that it was not in order.
That's if, again.
Yes.
The key word is if he got it. Mm. What if he got it 3 days before?
Then there's Butoutu still. The point I'm making is, I feel this is deliberately being carried. It's been, how do I phrase it? Things are not happening like this by mistake.
No, it's not a mistake.
There's intention to frustrate the system, to frustrate the process, to frustrate you in the hope that you will go away one day.
It is actually to abuse the system, to frustrate the process. And as I said, it's abusing this because the system allows for a person to say to the judge, my lord, I'm going to investigate what happened. While we are investigating, let's step down. And this step down does not mean set a date. But again, you look at exactly why would the government or the Minister of Justice or the prosecuting or whoever changes those laws to say the High Court of the Country, everything must be electronic scanned. And you see it at MPs. MPs, when they go and present papers in court, they've got this notepads and laptops and all that, and they're not making that available for, you know, the one of the arms of the state, judges, should be, even if they cast, there's cloud, there's backing up of documents and all. Why wouldn't they do that for them? Why are we still working on paper? Even if they prefer to work on paper, which I'm old school, I prefer to work on paper.
We can work on paper, but they have a cloud backup. Have cloud backup, so dockets don't disappear.
Exactly. And again, you know, some of the questions I get, you're not allowed to ask in court. Again, that's the system. Don't allow you to ask. Because when I think you could have actually said to the judge, but when did you read that fact?
No, really.
When did you notice?
No, but if I was your representative, I would have asked the judge, with all due respect, when did you get this file?
Yeah.
That you're noticing on the morning that we're hoping for justice for my client, that you've made up your mind already about where we're going.
These are some
because this is a clear-cut case, Bozang. It's a clear-cut case. The CCMA were clear from day one.
Yeah.
Now the can is being kicked along the road.
And it's running. Bozang
will get tired because we're just kicking the can along the road.
But you know, I don't get tired. When I'm in a battlefield, you are in. I was telling somebody yesterday that Kimuhuruts and Bahuruts, like those guys in Zirast, we are peaceful people. We never start a fight.
True.
But once we are in a battle,
there's
no time for giving up. I will not give up, no matter how long it takes. What I'm intending to do with this whole thing is to create a space and a platform in the future to can aid people who have been subjected to this based on my experience. This may be a calling, you know, to say there are people who can afford a lawyer. There are lawyers that I actually know way more than them about the processes in courts and labor and how people are suffering. Lawyers make their money.
Yeah.
They will get their money for appearance on that day and they don't care. But once we don't hit, especially the state and companies with costs in their personal capacity, that's one of the things I'm going to drive in the public service. That people who have wasted legal fees on which hunting other people or on matters that it was clear that you will not win this, they must start paying from their personal capacity, not with your taxes.
Absolutely.
Once we arrive at that stage as a nation, that when a minister or a DG or a CEO or a commissioner has abused their powers to can witch hunt a person or to can push a matter, even if it's not witch hunt, a matter that was, it was glaring, it was clear.
It was clear cut.
That you will not win on this thing. So they didn't apply their mind.
Sure.
They were negligent. They wasted state resources. Let them pay from their personal capacity, especially when there's legal advices.
But is that not what happened with Advocate Mkweban?
Yeah,
that she had to pay out of her own pocket.
More and more are going on that case. More, sure. There's more cases. There's a case of, in the private sector, a manager of SPA that was ordered to pay. There's a case at the court in Witbank where the municipal manager was directed by court to pay. The latest that was late last, it was UNISA. It was a very big case with UNISA and management of UNISA. And we discussed the Ntate Motsoaledi one as well. You remember before he left Home Affairs, Minister Motsoaledi, where he was hit by courts in personal capacity.
Sure.
Because the court said, but the legal advisors, they'd advise you not to do this, and you went ahead and you did this. If we can start getting more and more of such judgments where civil servants or politicians or those with money are made to pay in their personal capacity, because people's lives is their personal capacity. And as it's my personal income, somebody's having their state income. And that's the difference.
And you know, the saddest thing for me about this is this injustice doesn't just affect you, it affects your family.
When
is that? It affects your capacity to earn an income and to be able to just buy bread.
Yeah.
The fact that you haven't had an income for 2 years now.
Yeah, 27 months now.
That in itself is an injustice. But the fact that now they can drag this thing to the courts in the hope that you're going to tire.
Yeah. And why would I tie after 2 years? And Tato, when I started speaking about the injustice of the justice system, I mentioned that the system looks at Botsang in court.
Sure.
Does not think of the offsprings. Mm. Understand? You know, people, when politicians talk in court, they always say, black families were extended. We are big.
Sure. Mm.
You know, there's my grandmother, there's my mother who's a pensioner, there's my kids. You know, there's cooling, there's well-being, there's dogs to feed, and there's well-being as a whole.
No, sporty has oji.
To can be stable, understand, for your own mental health. So the damage that happens to people because the justice system is delayed, it's corrupted. It's not a corrupted, it has been corrupted. And the laws are unfair towards the victims.
True.
You understand? And that's my only problem. The law, it's there, it's written, but it doesn't cover the victims. Mm. You can talk of murder, you can talk of rape, you can talk of car hijackings. We spoke about firearms earlier on. You understand? You sit in your house and there's somebody in your house in the middle of the night, and suddenly you know there's no other person. You live alone, or the kids are not there, and there's somebody in the house. The law says you must first check who's that person. What is he doing? Is he endangering your life?
Was your life armed? In danger?
Is your life in danger?
And you can't even pull out your gun.
Yes.
Because that'll change their behavior.
Exactly.
So
it can make them violent towards you. They came to steal the TV.
So they must never know you have a gun. Until you are really in danger, then you can bring out. Guys, owning a gun is a lot.
it's madness. But you know, some of these things, and like I said, I know people have shot people on car hijackings, and they're like, but that person did not have anything. Or smash and grab.
Yes,
smash and grab. They are not endangering your life. They're actually grabbing your stuff.
You see videos of someone who's. Maybe there was an attempted hijacking.
Yeah.
Now they're driving off.
Oh.
And they're shooting at the car.
The law says you can't.
The law, it's clear that the law says you can't.
Yeah.
What happens to those people? Because you never hear of a case where they tried to take Botsang's car and he shot at them as they drove off.
Yeah.
But you never hear of any cases that Botsang was found guilty of discharging of a firearm in a public place.
No, but recklessly, if somebody lays a charge, somebody must lay a charge, and criminals are not going, you understand?
Okay.
If you just discharge it and the cops come, or you report it,
okay.
Nobody has complained. Nobody has laid a charge. Criminals are not going to come and say he tried to shoot us when he tried to hijack him.
So is it similar to the treason case with AfriForum and Solidarity, where, you know, they're saying the law is being used against them, but the argument is if Botsang opens a case and says someone was treasonous, the NPA have a responsibility
to do that,
to look into it.
Yes. So NPA is doing his job.
They're just doing their job.
Yeah. But they've changed the tone, those ones. You know, you are actually delving into. They've changed the tone. They say Trump and his people didn't hear them properly. I was looking at, what is his name, Krill?
Kali Krill.
Kali
yes.
Krill.
Yeah.
Say, no. They are being misinterpreted. But you must also see the statement issued by their lawyer, Advocate Kehinel.
Mm.
Very arrogant in that statement. Very. Yo, he says, bring it on. We know that we'll win it hands down. Because NPA, it's useless.
No, but Ibile, it has nothing to do with the NPA. The treason threshold is here. Kana, which party laid the charge?
It's the Umkhonto Wesizwe party. Then there's two individuals mentioned.
The treason threshold is here.
Yes.
They're coming in here.
Yeah.
So that at a treason level, they're not going to win it.
No, they will not. I also have a statement. I said yesterday, and people didn't like it, but I said for as long as the DA and the ANC are in power in South Africa, no white person will be charged for treason. Never. The charge. Prosecuted and convicted for treason. Never. It won't happen. You know, we have to be realistic.
Sure.
I looked at Dr. I think it's Dr. Letlape of the Save South Africa. What is the Herman Mashaba's party? Action SA,
yes.
Addressing the president in parliament. I saw a clip, and Dr. Letlape was saying to the president, We must start removing the makeup on us as African people or blacks in South Africa. The laws have changed. They've been written. They're sitting there. There's no change in South Africa. The land ownership is still the same. There's still discrimination. There's still apartheid. We just put makeup on it. We covered it. I'm one of the people that says you can never, ever touch politically active, or whether it's civil organization like AfriForum, Solidarity, and whoever for racism, never, it won't happen. It will cause chaos, and we know that the Mandela-led negotiated political settlement have created that buffer to say, don't be seen like you want to intimidate or reverse apartheid by jailing white people.
There was a post, he's clearly a Pan-Africanist, and it was after Solidarity and AfriForum said they're not going to lose any sleep over this treason charge.
Treason charges, yes, yes.
And someone was saying, you know, the problem is if the black parties were united enough, they could get a majority that could enable them to adjust the constitution and some of the laws in this land to allow for things to start moving.
Yes.
Until such a time, a lot of things will not move.
They will not. In addition to that, that's why they are making sure that black political formations are not united.
Yeah.
They get funded by the same white, you know, capital. If they are united, it's going to be a danger for them. That's why we still have areas in South Africa where black people cannot live.
Yeah.
And we'll only mention Orania. There's many other areas where they, you know, tactically discriminate for black people who can buy property in there. They don't say they don't want black people in, but they use means and ways to do that.
Either the barrier to entry or we are full.
Yes, and you understand? Yes. And when you come, then they want to charge you ridiculous prices. They are right to the property. But unless we change the laws of this country to can bring back the balance, you know, this is a race.
Sure.
And we started very way backwards where white kids with white privileges are here.
Some would even argue a lot of black people have not even started that race.
We haven't started that race.
A lot of black people are still putting on their shoes.
Exactly.
But they don't have shoes. So now they're waiting for shoes.
Now they're waiting for shoes. Yeah. So that's where the law is unjust. Again, you just made a typical example of an unjust legal system. And we've got 400 MPs there, of which almost 170 of them are African people.
Sure.
They can't change the laws. That will make our lives better. We don't say they must reverse apartheid. We don't say they
must be reckless.
Or be reckless. Do laws that will make life better for us. You understand? Yes. And that's all, so that we can apply them, so that the judges are empowered. Now the judges are not empowered to can make decisions on our behalf.
I laughed at one of the other comments. One of the other comments was like, you know, sometimes I understand why some countries switch off the internet and people just disappear.
Does that person wish to go and live in North Korea or in China?
But you know what? I think sometimes, and this is taking nothing away from the democracy. Sometimes democracy gets in the way of progress, eh?
Yes. No. No, for me, not even sometimes. Most of the time. We have been in a so-called democratic state with the most balanced constitution in the world for 30 years. And the situation has gotten worse for various reasons. For corruption, for maladministration, for injustices of the past, for the negotiated political settlement. We are always on the back foot. Understand? Look at the countries where there is no democracy, Tato. Look at Burkina Faso in Africa. Understand? Look at how Gaddafi in Libya progressed without democracy. Look at how China, North Korea, and all that are progressing without democracy. Understand? Let's look at that. I'm talking real examples. Burkina Faso, they couldn't feed themselves 3 years back.
Yeah.
They could not. They had to import everything, including rice from Ghana. Today, Burkina Faso is feeding the Sahel region. They are served in 3 years' time because they took this democratic thing, threw it out the window, and said, we'll do things our way. Fine, South Africans won't do that. You can.
But what do you say to people that say, be careful what you wish for? Because you might say, let's suspend democracy until some madman thinks, now I can be, you know, a ruler for life. Because unfortunately, when we get to that level, without checks and balances, before you know it, people are disappearing. There's extrajudicial killings. There's
That's not necessarily. There's countries that have monarchies, and there's nothing democratic about monarchy. And there's order. The United Kingdom is one example. Yes, somebody may say,
but it's a figurehead.
It's a figurehead. They've got democracy. It's okay, but Tato, if it works, if whoever a dictator, or and why should it be an old man? Why can't it be a 34-year-old Thomas Sankara or Ibrahim Traore who says, I'm going to take over this country and I will not stay in power forever, or I will stay as long as the people want me to stay. But the people benefit. And I've used Libya as an example. Gaddafi was in power in Libya for almost 40 years. 2 years after he was killed by his own people, although albeit supported by the Americans, 2 years, look at Libya today. Look, the quality and the standard of the Libyans. They own their minerals, they shared in their minerals, the level of education, the level of security, and everything else. In a desert, that man made that country to can even plow fruits and vegetables. In a desert. And today, look at them. Where is the world? Because America brought democracy. Look at Libya today. You understand? They killed Thomas Sankara in the 80s in Burkina Faso to try and instill democracy using one of them. What happened to Burkina Faso for almost 30 years?
Sure.
It was poverty. In 3 years, a leader of Burkina Faso comes and turns things around, and the people have food. The people have security. The people have education. There is stability in that country. Now, give me that over democracy any day. What did democracy do to us? I'm 1 week without water. I'm 2 years sitting at home. There's graduates sitting at home. And there's democracy. There's people that the state pays.
There's illegal immigrants you can't deport.
There's illegal immigrants that you can't deport. There's illegal immigrants who are rapists, murderers, robbers, are sitting in jail eating at least three
meals a day.
But we feed them.
It's a nice holiday.
Yes. As that Zimbabwean guy once said, it's nice to be in jail in South Africa. You get fed, you get medicines, you get educated.
And the TV.
All in the name of democracy. You understand? If that's what it has done to us.
Yeah.
Like you said, I may be wishing for something and it becomes worse. I may end up here with a dictator that I can't stand. But if it works, if I'll feel safe, if the people will eat, if the people will eat, we're sitting now here worried about AGOA and funding for medicines and all that. We are sitting here while we've got land, we've got herbs, we've got doctors, we've got experts, we have the money. We have the money.
And minerals.
We have everything.
And other relationships we could cultivate.
You see?
But we're busy rappel America.
Yeah, we're busy praying to Trump there, who is actually want to reverse. I actually think Trump is not reversing the achievement. I think he wants to fix. He wants to fix Africa and other dependent countries to say, stop depending on me.
And remember I said that, in fact, while we're here, let's actually move to Trump, because he addressed, he did his State of the Nation earlier this week.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm one of those people that says, let's prepare for life without AGOA.
It does.
If you prepare for the worst, it can get worse.
Yes.
So let's prepare for a life without AGOA. I mean, you're looking at Trump press play on his tariffs against Canada, Mexico, and China.
Yeah.
And they're pushing back.
Yes, they are.
And but the sad thing is, after they embarrassed Zelensky last week at the White House.
Yes, in the Oval Office.
In the Oval Office. He posted 2-3 days ago about how he's willing to work under the leadership of Trump.
The great leadership of Trump.
And the speculation is chances are he will concede to a certain extent on the minerals demands that Trump is making. And if I'm not mistaken, Trump, I think, is saying they want unlimited access to those minerals to the value of $500 billion.
Yeah.
Although they've only given, whether it's a loan or not, I'm not sure, but they've only given about $100
billion. No, Trump says it's more. He can only account for $100 billion. Where's the other that came into it? But remember, when you give, it's not only cash.
Yeah.
Some help or spending came in terms of equipment and missiles, which are very expensive.
Yeah.
But I told people and that Zelensky he's going to go back. Mm. People said, no, he didn't sign last week. Fair, I predicted he would sign. Mm. He tried to go to France and Britain. Mm.
Now, but he went, though, and the EU generally, and I think almost as a way to say to Trump, don't worry, we will cover him.
We'll cover him. Yeah, but do they have the budget? And, you know, most of the states in Europe, Germany, France, Italy, they're in a multi-party state.
Sure.
So they can't easily go alone, the same as in South Africa. One. Two, the kingmaker here is President Putin.
Mm.
Trump can scream and talk and not. The biggest benefactor of this whole thing is going to be Russia.
Mm.
And they are quite making for America, waiting for America to make a move. And America will make a move. Mm. You understand? But if we flip the coin and we look at how Canada, Mexico, and China responded to Trump, I think it came as a shock to the Americans.
Mm.
I think they never thought the Canadians specifically will respond like that, imposing the same tariffs, removing anything written made in America on their shelves with immediate effect. And the words, I listened to the president, the prime minister of Canada,
Trudeau. Yeah.
He says he never believes in Wall Street news, but they like to call Trump as Dumpf.
Yeah.
And he's sorry that he's going to say this guy is Dumpf in what he's doing, because he is going to hurt the American people more. He was actually addressing the American people. So American people, it's not about Donald Trump. I've worked with him for 8 years. We have worked well together, even in businesses. But this time he has made a Dumpf move, and I'm coming for you.
In fact, that's what I'm not sure he's understanding, that if you're imposing higher tariffs on, let's say, Chinese goods.
Yes.
If those Chinese goods are in demand in America, American people are the ones who are paying.
Yeah.
Because I want my whatever it is
made
from Temu.
In China, yes.
So if you're going to put a 25% tariff on it, I'm paying 25% more.
Yeah.
Because it will leave China costing what it costs already.
Look, I think it's punishing the rich in America, or those who can afford. Let me not say the rich. Those who can afford to import with that. Those are the ones that is going to punish. But it's not only with that. Mexico has come and they've said the same thing. They're imposing the same tariffs.
Mm.
China has come and say, you can't bully us. We have never been bullied.
Yeah.
And we will bring our goods there. You can impose the thing. We don't have anything to lose, because imposing on import tariffs happens at the port of entry.
Exactly.
When they leave China, when Tata...
We're exporting, Tina.
Yeah. When Tata orders his 10 Havals for his factory, China will send 10 Havals. The problem becomes when the Havals arrives at the port of entry,
exactly,
where Tata has to pay.
So now Americans are going to pay more for the Havals.
Yes. Now Americans are going to pay more. You know, Mexico has one of the biggest Volkswagen plants in the world.
Mm.
It's in Mexico. They are exporting a lot to the U.S. and to Canada. The car that you call Jetta, they're still making it. It's called Bora now.
Yes.
And it's well-driven in Americas. And Mexico says, it's okay, impose them. We'll supply. We'll continue producing and all that. That is going to impact American people and American companies.
Absolutely.
I don't think Donald Trump is stupid. I don't think, look, Tato, it has been his campaign policy and noise. He said it at his inauguration. During the course of this week, as he said, he pressed play for this three. I don't know why this three, because they're the three biggest three. He pressed play on them, and he's playing. What did the other countries do? Because logically, if economies should have prepared to you know, like shock absorbers, so to absorb this shock.
Yeah.
Because Trump told us, what is he going to do?
Sure.
You know, when I listened to him at the AMs, and he was talking about, why did we have to send money to Lesotho? It took me 3 times to understand what was he saying. He was actually saying Lesotho.
Hey, he's saying that about $8 million of the U.S. aid funding went towards the Alphabet Gang.
Yes.
The Alphabet Gang in Lesotho. And he's like, why are we spending $8 million on the Alphabet Gang in Lesotho?
Yes, yes. So the country should have prepared for this. What Trump is doing, and this is my view, I think he is pushing us to a corner to be self-reliant, you know, or to trade, take our business somewhere.
Or to come begging bigger.
Yeah, like Zelensky is doing now.
Exactly.
He is doing that for the American people. If it works, they will benefit. If it doesn't, he's going to be in deep cack.
Mm.
Because Americans will take him out before the 4 years.
Right, there's now, a midterm election, what, in 2 years?
Yeah.
Mm.
right now, Tesla of what do you call it?
Musk.
It's already suffering. Did you see what happened? He accused one of the top businessmen from Mexico to be funding, or Latin America to be funding terrorism and these drug cartels. And his company, this guy, has been doing business with Starlink. Is it Starlink, right? The
satellite.
The business, satellite. Yeah. He canceled all contracts with immediate effect.
Mm.
And I don't know if Elon Musk was not aware that this person is critiquing, he's doing business with him. In the middle of that, China decided to produce more electric vehicles to challenge Tesla, and they are going to export them to other countries in Latin America and those Panama Canal and all that. You can go into America. People, these cars are cheap. The Chinese vehicles are cheap if you compare them to the Germans and the American and the British vehicles. So even if they will add the tariffs, it will still be cheaper to buy them and flood the market. You know that? So it may backfire, but for me as an African, I think we are going to feel the pain. We are going to suffer because of the reliance we've been having on not only AGOA, various NGOs or foreign aid from other countries. There's a lot of foreign aid coming to Africa.
Yeah.
It is going away from the Americans. We are going to feel the pain, but it will make President Ramaphosa and the cabinet to wake up and say, what are we doing to save that project that was funded?
I always think that nobody should waste a crisis. And if it means losing AGOA is what we have to live with, let's fasten our seatbelts now. We have enough clever people on this continent for us to find a way.
A way.
And maybe it's about damn time we found a way. Because we should have never found ourselves begging anyone for anything with the resources we have.
Exactly.
And if what is going to happen is Trump is going to force nations that maybe have never been doing business properly together to start entertaining one another.
Yes.
Then let that happen.
Let that happen, yes.
Let that happen.
Let Canada bypass the U.S. and send the goods to Mexico, and Mexico send the goods to Canada and other countries. And let them leave their Americans to focus on America and make it great for themselves. It's fair. If they want to make it great by dominating the world, the world can return. Look what happened also during the course of this week. The Arab League met to counter Trump's strategy to say he wants to rebuild and reconstruct Gaza. The Arab League met. For the first time, they've agreed to say, you know what, we'll do it for Gaza. We'll do it for the people of Gaza. Well, they say they are going to take it to the world. They're going to present it to various other leagues in the world, like the EU, like the United Nations, like the African Union, and the, you know, Asian Tigers. They're going to present this proposal to say, those who want to contribute and help, let's do it under the umbrella of the Arab League.
As on to rebuild Gaza.
To rebuild Gaza. Yes. You see what it has done now? It has directly countered the U.S. to say, or Trump's administration to say, we want to take over and make that place a holiday destination and what.
Riviera.
Yeah. But you know why the Arab League are reacting so quickly? They normally don't react like this when it comes to Gaza or to Palestine. I'll tell you what's the main reason why they are reacting now. To make sure that America does not occupy that place.
Yes.
Because the next thing we will know is that the whole of Gaza will be a battlefield, will be American military base,
yes, yes,
like they've done in Yemen and other countries. And I think that's the only reason they are reacting. To say, we'd rather spend money than have America to be here. Because once America takes over a place, you must know, it's not just hotels and business and holiday, as Trump is saying. That will be a military base for the Americans. And it may,
and possibly,
it may worsen the situation.
And possibly simply so that Israel feels safer.
Yes, and Israel feels safer. But the West also, okay, this is the one thing that I don't understand why Trump, I've understood everything he has done and said. Did you see that he is refusing to recognize the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation, which has been the administrative government?
Sure.
It has been having a semi-diplomatic office in the U.S., like a representative. They close it down with immediate effect. Says, no, I'm not going to recognize these people, and they are supposed to be government because they've got Hamas as their friend. So Trump has closed them down. So, but again, with the Palestinians, did it help them to have an office in the U.S.? It never helped them. Actually, the more they had representative and they were knocking at the American administration, it was the more Americans were funding.
Sure.
Israel. So, yeah, bro, it's safety belt on, and I think that's what Africa must prepare for. But for our goods, and things that we produce as South Africa, you know, my advice would be, look for the market somewhere. Yes. The world is very bigger. The US is not the world, it's part of the world.
We already have relationships. Yeah. Let's make them deeper.
Let's make them deeper. Let's use them.
Let's deepen the relationships that are working. Let's find other ways of getting goods out to the world.
Exactly.
Yes, it's a massive market in the US. It's billions of rands worth of business. But if it means we must look elsewhere, you must look elsewhere.
Yeah, and it's not saying the goods cannot come. If the Americans still want our wine and our tomatoes, tomatoes and oranges, they will get them but at 25% more.
Yeah, but they will not be going through the AGOA filter.
Yes, they will not go through the AGOA. They will come much more expensive.
Sure.
And it's their creation. It's their president. I said long ago, Americans finally got what they deserve.
Sure.
They deserve Donald Trump. Mm. He's either going to mess up the world or he's going to fix the world. I think he's going to fix the world.
Mm.
I think he's going to mess up America, but he's going to fix the world, because the world will start realizing, but there's China here, there's Russia here, there's the Arab League to do business with. And or we are not going to export our and rely on AGOA to can have our farmers here to succeed.
Mm.
We are going to be self-reliant. Mm. This is where these racist people of the labor organization and AfriForum, instead of going to Trump and fueling this thing, they should have gone to Ramaphosa and say, we want to help the nation, we want to feed the nation, we want to farm and feed Africa. Can you, you know, extend your relations with SADC? You know, there's a lot of African farmers, you know, Boers actually, who are all over African continent helping many countries regarding farming, because South Africa is one of the, you know, best farming countries. That's what they should have done. But because of the Swartgevaar mentality, they couldn't approach the government to say, what are we going to do as a state or as a nation to counter the madness of Donald Trump?
Do you know that, and I found this out the other day, from a friend of mine who lives and works in the US, that there's a visa, I think it's called the H-2A visa.
Okay.
That allows for American farmers to bring in farm workers to work for, I think it's up to 10 months.
Okay.
Then they must go back home. Apparently, there's a lot of Afrikaans kids.
I know in Africa.
No, apparently there's a lot of Afrikaans kids working on farms in the US on this visa.
Maybe I should start farming. You can teach me a thing or two and then get that visa and go there.
So I had no idea this visa exists. So apparently it allows for foreign nationals to work in the US in agriculture. It's a specific agriculture visa.
But
so basically you are laborers for, I think, 8 to 12 months, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You must go home and then you can come back again. So seasonally, a lot of Afrikaans kids, I'm told, are using this H-2A visa.
And you may find this thing has been there for long. That's why the Solidarity and AfriForum, you know, are so low and going to America and say, we want to go. And I'm going to come, migrate. Wear your khakis and come and migrate and fill school and come and live here. But they've come back. AfriForum have come back, said, no, man, we're misunderstood. Do you think they were shaken? I don't think they were shaken by this. Criminal charges or treasonous charges. I don't think it shakes them.
If you know the law, you'll know that it's not going to stand in court.
They wrote the law.
So it's like I'm saying, at a legal level, I understand what they mean when they say they're not going to lose sleep.
They're not going to sleep.
But having said that, though, we might need legislation that says that you owe your country a certain level of allegiance.
And yes,
I know people from war zones living in this country that will never speak ill of their country.
Exactly. Ever. Even if they live outside.
Regardless of how much shit they went through in their own country, because their flag for them is still a source of pride and hope that things will get better. But you will not find them here talking rubbish about their countries.
I think
South Africa is the only country dealing with bitter exes, to tell you the honest truth. I don't know any other country suffering from a bitter ex syndrome, where people are speaking crap about
their own country or their leader, for that matter. At some stage, President Zuma was the most insulted head of state in the world.
Mm.
At some stage, people were calling things
by his own people.
By his own people, you understand? I mean, but you can also look at the lawlessness in South Africa. The lawlessness here that is being conducted. You know how many videos go on social? This past week, the city of Joburg, just here downtown, the MMC, they were trying to evacuate people from these dangerous buildings. They were beaten up. The people were beating the police that you can't move us. And then they said, but we're moving you, as the law requires, we're moving you to a safer place.
Mm.
They say, no, we don't want that place. We want to tell the city of Joburg where we want to move.
Mm.
These people are foreigners. They are occupying buildings illegally. These buildings are dangerous. And they tell the state, your constitution says you must find us a place to stay. We find them a place to stay. They say, but we don't like that place. Give us another place that we prefer. That is absolute lawlessness, and I don't care human rights commissions, what do they say?
Mm.
I don't care how much jails are crammed. If I was the head of state here, I would have arrested those people for trespassing, lock them up, and deport those who do not have papers to be here. Somebody will say they will come back. Don't deport them nice. Like don't put them on comfortable buses. You see, you can't punish
people. What, swim back?
How you came, you'll go back the same way.
I repeat.
At some stage, we must draw the line.
I repeat, at a certain point between the Constitution and the NGOs, we are going to go nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Those two things are the problem for this country. Our Constitution is a problem.
Mm.
These NGOs, which country this week? Oh, Ethiopia.
Mm.
They shut all NPOs and NGOs out this past week in Ethiopia.
Mm.
They said, you are causing problems here. You are telling us the human rights, women's rights, they shut them all out.
Mm.
That's the steps we must take.
Welcome to Africa. My man, we're out of time.
Okay, Tato.
But it was a nice chat.
Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Really, I did as well.
Where do we find you online, brother man?
Online, botsangm@gmail.com or at botsangm on social media, at botsangm social media handles. And on WhatsApp, it's 082-485-9100. Mm.
So this 8 bar in dollars, Kolisotho.
Yeah.
Towards Alphabet Gang. So what is it? What is it? Is it like awareness programs?
No, part of it was awareness programs. Part of it was drugs. Remember, there are people who went to the US or wherever for hormonal change and sex change and all that. So you can't discriminate alone about those people.
Mm.
But it was also mainly awareness.
Okay.
To say to Basotho people, remember, but Lesotho is a very conservative, mostly rural, a country. And they were telling people, like it started in South Africa, Tato. Remember when the LGBTI community was born in South Africa, there was resistance, especially from townships.
Mm.
But because of awareness and TV programs and organizations that are coming to say, no, but you can't discriminate against these people. So most of their money went there.
Mm.
But Trump is just using the wrong words.
Mm.
You know, when he says it's easy, is it for the watch? He called them names. He says use some derogatory words. But again, when somebody gives you money, it's his money. If you don't do what I say with the money you give me, you do something else that I don't like, I'll withdraw my money.
You know, Trump in less than 4 weeks has pissed all over the goodwill that USAID has built over the last 60-70 years.
Yeah.
You know, my mom is a USAID what is it? Is it a beneficiary?
Yes,
yeah. My mom studied, did a degree in Delaware through USAID.
Yes,
when I was in high school.
They are money.
So I'm one of the people that says USAID worked for us.
Yeah,
because my mom wanted to go study, and USAID had a program.
A program, yes.
And she applied, and they sent her to the US for 3 years.
But we must also look at why is Trump canceling these things.
Mm.
That nobody's asking, why is this guy doing this?
What do you think the bigger picture is?
Keep the money at home. America is in debt. America does not have money. Keep the money at home.
Yeah, because, I mean, Musk was even saying maybe we must just cut people checks. Because there's also
the civil servants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My I've got a cousin who works in the US, not a Trump fan at all. But during COVID, got a nice check. And I remember getting a text that I'm not a Trump fan, but I love the check I just got.
Yeah, they offered them money to say, those who have been sitting at home since COVID, there's a budget for you.
Sure.
If you want to continue sitting at home, we can give you a check and stay at home and don't come back to work.
Sure.
So there's a benefit for the Americans in a bigger picture. That's how I view it.
But it's also a middle finger to diplomacy and a middle finger to the goodwill they've built.
Donald Trump diplomacy, zero.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's only been 4 weeks, guys. It's only been 4 weeks, maybe six.
Yeah.
I hope your seatbelt is strong enough for another 3 years and 10 months. This has been another episode of Wow What a Week, hashtag Politrix with Botsang Modimo Mmuilwa. Thank you for tuning in. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg, we are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography, to artist The Flo Fraser for all of the imaging, and Keletso Modisa King, our executive producer. Till next week, be safe, love yourself, and have a great week, in spite of yourself and what you might not love about yourself. Cut.